As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Total Soccer Show. My name is Taylor Rockwell, and today we're talking a lot about MLS roster moves thus far, as well as moves that might happen and maybe moves that should happen. To do so, I'm joined by a man who has not committed himself to growing a mullet in the new year. It's Joe Lowry. Hi, Joe. Congrats on the standard haircut.
Thanks, man. It's really nice. I feel good about my flow. I feel good about it not changing anytime soon other than the occasional trim. I don't feel great about being number three on the facial hair power rankings for today's Tuesday show. Usually I feel like I'm at least level with Goss or I've got a little bit of an edge. Today I am down one slot in that power rankings, but the no mullet thing does make me feel a lot better, Taylor. Thank you.
I'm glad. Joe, what is the silliest thing that you've committed to on social media that then came back to haunt you?
Weirdly, I don't get into a lot of those traps.
No?
You know, like I think we'd be at one point committed to eating a literal hat if Austin FC did something. And we'll get into the next situation here in a moment. But no, I try to stay in a pretty comfortable spots online, and it's mostly working for me.
It sounds like Werner Herzog vowing to eat a shoe, and then he did. Joining us this week is a gentleman who I'm assuming also has no plan and isn't Twitter committed to rocking an absurd hairstyle. It's Tom Bogert. Hi, Tom.
What's going on, boys? I just want to get it out of the way here first. I think Joe would look excellent with a mullet. So Joe, if you want to join me.
Tom's trying to transfer his mullet debt onto me.
Yep.
I think not, man.
Not transfer. Just do it together. Misery loves
company. Oh, I see. You're looking for a merry band. Well,
got to tell you, my fiance isn't thrilled when she found out.
Shocker, yeah.
So for those who have not seen, Tom, how did this come to be? How did you find yourself in this predicament?
I borderline don't know. Apparently, 2 years ago, I replied to a tweet joking that when Brian White gets called up, I'll gladly do a mullet. I had no recollection of sending that tweet. It was a reply. It wasn't like, so like the views obviously on it were lower because you have to be looking at that conversation. And, you know, 25 minutes before the lineups came out, I got a text from Doyle sending me that tweet. I was like, how the hell did you find this, man?
Yeah.
I'm like, stop searching my tweet, you dork.
Do you think he's kept that in the chamber this whole time? Does he have a spreadsheet where he just tracks ridiculous Twitter promises?
He claims he was trying to Twitter search for one of his own Brian White U.S. national team takes and just happened to find this. I was like, that's suspect, man. I don't believe you.
Well, so are you actually going to have to do it now? Are you growing?
Yeah, I'm a man of my word. I will. That's the thing. It's not like I hope that people aren't expecting me to have it for 2 months. Yeah, I could do it for a couple days. You know, I feel a little stupid going into the barbershop twice.
I did actually find a tweet from you from 4 years ago that you ever cut your hair in a mullet, you would keep it that way for 6 months.
Right.
So I feel like you're backtracking.
You're
kind of in trouble here.
When you said I found another tweet of yours from 4 years ago, I was like, oh no, what did I promise this time? Didn't think that I did much of this.
Now
people
Tom
kept on trying to get me
Oscars.
to wager my mustache on son. I was just like, absolutely not, you clowns.
Yeah, there is a line here.
Yeah, never going on
some
the
respect.
Table. Yeah, give me a break.
That's a piece of national security. That mustache must remain. Tom, we are going to talk a lot about MLS moves that have happened, should happen, as I said in the intro. Joe and I spent about 15 minutes yesterday on the Weekend Review talking about the USA's 1-0 loss to Slovenia, the US DEF team. Not really sure which one that was. For you, a man who now has to grow a mullet because of that team, were there any sort of takeaways for you, any things that you particularly enjoyed or thought were particularly noteworthy?
I'll start negative first. I really don't understand why this wasn't like at least 8 players Olympic age eligible. I just don't really understand why that wasn't the emphasis. Again, I know that a lot of players, like still 11 players made their senior debut, so it was experimental, all of that stuff. But I thought the whole point of this roster being the way that it was without some of the air quote more veteran U.S. national team guys that are on the periphery of the pool that are in MLS. You know, Rodon and Morris and Areola and Frerin, and you kind of go down the list of all these guys who weren't called up. I thought the whole point was to run mostly an Olympic age eligible 11 and kind of see who's going to solidify their place on that team and everything. And then the starting 11 comes out and there's only 5 Olympic age eligible players, which I didn't love. So Watzke as a center back and a back four, I really don't see it. I just don't see him being there in the future at all, really, for the national team. So just kind of feel like that was a waste as well. But on the positive side, I know that Kamungo was his mistake that led to the goal. Other than that, I thought he was really lively, dynamic. He's the kind of player that, like, I think he's more or less solidified his place on the Olympic roster and, like, probably won't be as a starter or just maybe not as a starter because he's one, like, his profile is going to be super useful. You know, you're trailing by a goal with 20 minutes left. He's somebody who could come off the bench and make a difference. Another player that I think his stock rose the most was Esmer. I'm just going to say Esmer now because I'm in my head. Wing Revolution winger. He only has like 500 first team minutes for the refs. So I was a little bit surprised when he was called into this roster. But he was awesome. I thought he was the best player. I thought he did the most for his stock. I went from thinking like, oh, is he really going to make the Olympic team? To like, oh my God, like he's got to be on the team. So that was really good for him. I thought Luna was fine. McGuire was okay. Brian White didn't get any service, so he was okay, but it's not like he could have done too much more. I mean, it just kind of is what it is. And, you know, an inconsequential January transfer, January camp game for the Nationals.
Every fourth word contractually from Tom has to be transfer across all audio and visual mediums. So just as a disclaimer, mostly up front to listeners, you can expect more of that.
I'm glad to hear you talk about Kamungo in a positive way a little bit, because I think Joe was similarly inclined yesterday, and I was a bit more critical. Joe, so does that pretty much vibe with your takeaways on Kamungo?
Yeah, completely. I thought he was mostly really strong in this match, with the exception of that one moment that Tom mentioned. Like, he's a really, really exciting young player who's growing at a trajectory that's really hard to like get a grip on, right? This is not a guy who's played much professional soccer, let alone professional soccer at a top division kind of level. So he's come onto the scene very, very quickly and seems to be improving at a really rapid rate. What that will look like come Paris and come, you know, beyond that is kind of anybody's guess right now.
The obvious question when it comes to January camp, and one that I don't believe we got into yesterday, Joe, do either of you have strong opinions on which players from this roster are most likely or could become most likely to make like consistent U.S. rosters going forward?
Yeah, one that I think really will be there, it's just mostly a matter of when, is Diego Luna. Tom mentioned him. He was just kind of fine. I thought he was a little better than fine, but the bar was really low. Like, it wasn't like he did a ton of amazing stuff, just nobody around him in the midfield or really out wide outside of a few moments from Kamungo until Barakhtarevich and McGlynn came on were special. Like, Luna is special in this U.S. pool. A lot of it, I think, hinges on what this year looks like for him. Like, this year should be absolutely, no question, should be his breakout year with Real Salt Lake. And if he comes out, or maybe breakout's not the right term, but it should be the year that he takes a step forward and becomes, like, a very, very good Major League Soccer attacker because he has all the tools. Now, some of that depends on how Pablo Mastroeni wants to use him, but he looks like the real deal. Basically, anytime any of us watch him, he is really, really good. And I think his profile, Tom mentioned profile for Kamungo, like the silky smooth, press resistant, can turn out of tight spots, good vision, like that kind of player just straight up doesn't exist in this pool, really outside of someone like Gio Reyna. So Diego Luna is somebody that I think has a big future for the U.S.
I'm with you there, Joe, and I agree with kind of everything you're saying that like I guess he broke out last year with RSL, like from the U20 World Cup forward, like he really, you know, moved forward. But I totally agree. 2024 has to be another step forward, and I can tell you that Real Salt Lake are going to give him every chance. They are planning around that. Like, the profiles that they're looking for, because they need to add to their attack, you know, maybe a DP or maybe a young DP and kind of a TAM player or something like that. But the framework is who's going to fit well with Luna, because we want Luna, like Luna likes to drift in. We need somebody who's intelligent to interpret space that can work best with Luna. It's like all the feedback I'm getting is that they're planning around Luna being, if not the centerpiece, a centerpiece to that like attacking midfield.
Yeah, and kind of, I guess, shifting into, I know we'll do a bunch more MLS roster stuff later on. Tom, sticking with RSL, they have two DP spots open. And you mentioned, like, you know, maybe they're not going to fill both of those. Who knows exactly what that's going to look like. Do you know where they see Luna? Because I know, I've watched Diego Luna play since he was very young. I know coaches that have coached him and strongly believe that he should be a number 10. Pablo Mastroianni doesn't seem to really think that, given where he's played. Luna mostly played, for listeners, on the left side of a 4-4-2, really sort of became like a 4-2-2 because Luna likes to go inside and he kind of goes where he wants. But it's not the same as playing that dedicated 10 role. Tom, do you know where RSL's front office envisions him playing?
It seems like that to me. Again, things can change depending on what targets they get, but just some of the feedback I was getting is, so if they do play the 4-2-2,
yeah,
the second forward who's playing next to Ron, like that's who that there, it needs to be somebody who can drift wide when Luna tucks in. So
right,
like that's the framework of what they're thinking and what they're scouting. So that all leads me to believe that the current plan or the primary plan is Luna on the left wing, but playing inverted and having the freedom to go find the spaces. Cause they're also trying to sign a Greek left back who, again, I don't know much about him. He plays in the Polish league, but from the people at RSL that I spoke to, that they really like his ability to get forward and overlap. And that fits perfectly with if you have a player like Luna who's always trying to get into the half spaces in those channels to create the width. You need a left back that's overlapping constantly. And so, again, like all of these things lead me to believe that's their primary plan.
With RSL, if we're sticking with them for a second, do you like what you've seen in terms of the way they've constructed their roster thus far, the moves they've made? Are there obvious areas of need you'd like to see them pursue?
Yeah, I mean, I would really like to see them like take another Chicho Arango level swing with one of their DP spots. Like with Savarino being out as well, like again, when new ownership comes in, and look, new ownership did this to themselves. They took the victory lap at the press conference about how we're going to increase spending. And, you know, the subtext of that is, well, it's not hard to increase spending on the lowest spending team in the league, right? Like, so again, like I don't think that they're going to come out and drop a $15 million transfer fee on a player and then an $8 million transfer fee on another player. But I think it's fair to hope that outside of Chicho Arango now with that $6 million fee, that they bring in like another serious senior level DP. And then that third spot could either be a young DP or a restricted or whatever. Like, I'm not expecting two huge signings, but I don't think it's unfair to like really hope, because like to really hope or expect them to add one more, whether that's a second forward, whether that's a winger that really kind of frees up Luna to play more centrally. But this team, like, they have a lot of strengths, like Pablo Ruiz and Ojeda in the midfield. I think that's a really strong duo. Diego Luna taking the next step. Chicho Arango is a centerpiece to an attack. Like, he's, you know, he's not maybe quite Buanga's level, right? Or you know, insert the best, like Hani Mukhtar, but he's not far off. Like, if you go into a playoff game with Chicho Arango as your best player, you do have a chance of that player being the best player on the field in any given, you know, 90 minutes. So this team is really close. And if they were able to swing a high-level DP, like they, in a pretty weak Western Conference as well, they'd be among, I think, the definitely top four favorites, if not pushing for the top spot.
Joe, are you in agreement there? I'm assuming based on the
Yeah, I am. RSL just haven't done anything this offseason in terms of incomings. The biggest, most notable move that they've made is signing Fidel Barajas from the Charleston Battery,
yep,
who I love that move, and I'm here for the USL to MLS pipeline and sort of figuring out what that looks like going forward. But in terms of, you know, what it means for RSL's 2024 season, it probably doesn't mean very much. So they've let Demir Krylak go. Fair play. I think that made a lot of sense. He's not really fit and not able to play a starting role.
I can't believe
role.
Vancouver gave him a 2-year contract.
I love
Demir Krylak, man. I wouldn't. That's a 1-year guarantee for me.
Yeah, there have been a few too many injuries, and he's on the wrong side of 30. And then they let Savarino go back to South America, which is fair enough. I think Savarino is a good but not great MLS designated player. You can upgrade on that spot. We're just now waiting, like Tom said, for them to go out there and make the moves that show that they're trying to separate themselves from the soup that is sort of like the Western Conference spots below, Seattle, maybe, or maybe they're in the soup. Like, it's really hard to tell in the West right now.
Zooming out for a second, Tom mentioned RSL not likely to break the bank necessarily, not going to be one of the bigger spenders. FC Dallas, I think, still has like a DP spot available, which they've had available since January. Minnesota, I think, has three people working in their entire organization. For either of you, is there a team that has made a move or just done any business that you find surprising because it's not typically how they operate? Is there a team that you think is taking it more seriously, is making moves? I'm not asking specifically with Colorado in mind, but Colorado comes to mind.
That was where I was going to go with it too, because look, again, this isn't like they went out and hit a bunch of home runs, like just blank checks all over the place. But look, Georgi Mihailovic, club record transfer fee at north of $3 million. They were able to swing that Zach Steffen deal. They were able to swing the deal to bring back Sam Vines. They went out in free agency immediately and got Omir Fernandez, who he's either the youngest ever or second youngest ever available free agent on the market. What, I don't know if he or Griffin Dorsey was born before each other. They're in the same age bracket. But again, like, that's a pretty key signing. Like, that's MLS 4.0 or whatever, that there's less restrictions on free agency, and there still shouldn't be any restrictions on free agency if you call it free agency. But like, that's kind of one that's flown under the radar because they've made a bunch of other signings. Like, they're going to sign a defensive midfielder, and like, that's five new starters and a lot of high level starters. And particularly if they're able to convince Kellen Acosta to come back as that number six, like, I'm ready to overhype the hell out of Colorado. That's the case. Like, they're my, you know, the Orlando City Memorial winners of the offseason so far for me.
I'll push back a little bit on Colorado, not because I don't like what they've done this offseason. They're clearly better than they were last season, right? They were a train wreck last season.
But again, the last place, and like that's a fun thing to say, except like, you can't go anywhere.
It's the RSL spending principle that we're now coining, Tom, for future use. Like, they've gotten better. I just question, you know, Georgi Mihailovic will be the best player on that team. And he was probably the best player on that CF Montreal team that Wilfred Nancy had and took the second place in the Eastern Conference back in 2022. Like, he can be the cornerstone of a very good team. Do Colorado have the other pieces that Montreal have? They don't have the manager that Montreal had. I don't think anybody would argue that Chris Armas can do to a team what Wilfred Nancy has done to multiple teams down inside of Major League Soccer. And I don't even know that they have the other supplementary pieces around them. They've gotten stronger. Like, Sam Vines is a good MLS player. Kellen Acosta is a fine MLS player if they get him in as a free agent. Like they have pieces to go out and contend in the West. But I think if this team's in the Eastern Conference, like, we're still talking about them fighting for the playoffs, right? So I think there is still some measuredness, if that's even a real word, that we need when it comes to Colorado. They've so clearly gotten better. But I think, you know, you look at the massive hole, or at least massive question mark in the number nine spot when it comes to Navarro, in was on loan last year. Like, is he the guy? He didn't show really anything to make us believe he was, but he also didn't have any talent around him last year. So there are a lot of questions when it comes to the top end for me of this roster. I think players like 2 through 3 through 11 or 3 through 15 or whatever are competitive. But do they have the very top end to actually make a lot of noise? I think the jury's kind of still out on that.
I think that's fair too. And the best counter argument to my optimism for Colorado is to point out their DP9 is Rafael Navajo and their DP winger is Kevin Cabral.
Yep.
And it's like, I inexplicably have real estate on Kevin Cabral Island. So we'll see what happens this year. I don't know. That might be one I just have to die with. But I don't see it appreciating so much in value. But like, that's totally fair. Like, you can have, like, I think I agree pretty wholeheartedly with the like 3 through 11. I guess the pushback would be that 21 Colorado team.
Yep.
Like, who is their best player? Like, Diego Rubio, technically, right? Maybe. Like, Jonathan Lewis had a pretty good year, but not like. So I think it's a difference between, I guess, regular season success and postseason success. This is the kind of team that no matter how well they do, they'll feel vulnerable if they get to the playoffs, even if they're a higher seed, just because of, like, again, one game sample sizes. Your best player has to be your best player. And if they line up against borderline anybody in the Western Conference, they won't have the best player on the field. But I think this team is pretty well set for a solid regular season.
The other, I feel like, limitation in my mind might be the manager, Chris Armas. You mentioned him briefly. And when I was preparing to ask about him, I think I defaulted to making like catty comments and snarky jokes about him. And I realized, like, I don't really know that much about Chris Armas. I can point to some of the issues he has had or the firings that have occurred. Do either of you have an argument for why this hire might make sense? Why Colorado went for Chris Armas? Or do we overinflate some of the negatives around him. I basically don't really know where I stand on him, aside from he seems like not the most slam dunk of managerial appointments.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair as an assessment. Like, he is not shown across the Red Bulls, across Toronto. You know, it's hard to measure assistance impacts on team for those of us on teams that for those of us that are on the outside. When he's over in England with Leeds and Manchester United, like, who knows what was going on there? But he has not shown an ability to materially impact the team for the better. With that being said, I think there are some stylistic reasons why it makes sense to bring him into Colorado. You know, CSO, Colorado Rapids Chief Soccer Officer Padraig Smith has talked about, I definitely did not pronounce that correctly. We're going to move right Poor past it, that. Yeah. Poring, yeah, Poring Smith has talked about, like, you know, we want to go back to the Rapids way, sort of referencing previous years where they have gone more transition heavy, because let's face it, they just don't have the talent or like the Wilfred Nancy. I'm not trying to beat that drum and continue to go back to Nancy, but he's the only coach who's proven in MLS that I can ever recall an ability to turn a seemingly mediocre group of players plus a superstar or two into like a legit force in Major League Soccer. They just don't have the pieces as a club to go out there and play like 60% possession soccer. So let's go and let's mostly play against the ball. You know, Armas doesn't want to do that exclusively like Jesse Marsh does, but he doesn't want to have possession. They want to play likely a back four. They want to mostly stack numbers through the middle. But Armas is at heart a pragmatist. And I think that's what Colorado needed to try and help them stabilize and maybe not take a step forward past stabilizing. Maybe there'll be another voice to do that 3 or 4 years from now. But I think for the purpose of getting them back to like head above water territory, Armas is the guy that they identified and said, you know, he can help us do that.
Well, so I agree with all of that. And the kind of unspoken part here, too, is salary restraints. Colorado Rapids, I don't know what Chris Armas' contract is, but I'm extremely confident it's bottom half, if not bottom quarter. Right. Like, so that's part of the reason why, like, when you're shopping with that budget, You don't get to go pick off Wilfred Nancy. You don't get to go find like the top candidates on the market. So that's all part of it. But I can say with 100% certainty, Joe, that you are correct in that they, after they parted ways with Robin Fraser, they were like, we need to go back to transition. Yeah. They thought that's what they were still doing. And like they were building the roster to be transition based or at least transition emphasized because of their money constraints. Like, yeah, you can possess like Manchester City if you have quadruple the budget of everybody else more or less in your division, in your league, right? Because then you just go buy the best players and play the best style. Colorado Rapids aren't doing that. Nobody really in MLS can, right? Like, because that's the whole point of the salary cap. So you can't completely disregard transition anyway. And that's what Colorado thought they were going to continue and building on, because that's what the 21 team was. That's where they've had their most success. A story that was relayed to me is that Robin Fraser took a trip to watch training sessions of some of the better teams like City and Arsenal and some other stuff. And he comes back to Colorado before preseason and is like, look, like, and like, you know, having conversations with the front office and the club, like, what do you think about this year? He's like, look, man, I've seen the light. Like, we're gonna possess and we're gonna play like beautiful soccer. And then it's like, all right, well, the roster was kind of built for transit. Like, do you think that we could really do that? And it was like the freezing iron back was like, don't worry, we're gonna take goal kicks, pass the ball, and score pretty goals. Like, I think at that moment, people around Colorado were like, oh, no, this might be a long year. So they are trying very like that's the Chris Armas hire is absolutely to go back to pragmatism and to go back to kind of transition. Like that was the framework of the entire coaching search.
All right. Well, I hope that works for our Colorado listeners. I'm assuming everybody expected us to start with RSL in Colorado.
Yeah, let's go.
Chat.
Rocky Mountain, baby. Let's do it.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be back with more MLS roster chat shortly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Welcome back to the Total Soccer Show. We're talking MLS roster moves. Tom, let's move to Atlanta United for a second. Why was it such a priority for them to pursue only players whose names were impossible to pronounce? Can you take us through that list? Because I'm not even going to try.
I think that Garth Lagerwey is just like, I'm bored of just winning normally. We need to sign players who are difficult to pronounce as well. Not just good players.
It's crazy. It is kind of crazy to me that they really did. Like, not one of them is one that I would say with confidence I'm able to pronounce properly.
Bartosz Szlich, I believe.
That was good.
Nailed it.
That was really good. Follow-up question, Taylor. Josh Cohen, question mark?
Okay, is it Cohen or is it Cohn? It could go either way.
I see. Okay, all right. I like it. Fair enough.
Tom, of those signings, which one do you think will have the biggest impact for them since you successfully avoided having to list all of the different names?
No, Stian Gregersen, center back, is the Miles Robinson replacement. Josh Cohen. And then that's not a lot. Because again, Schlees was signed for
Saba Lobianice.
That was last summer.
Okay.
And Tristan Mjolnir. But like, so even that, like, that's an extension of it, of that since like June 1st, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 new starters at least. 6 if you count Caleb Wiley, like trading away Gutman to make sure that Wiley was going to play every game. Like, this team is so much better than it was a year ago today. And this was a team that a year ago today, or something about a year ago, was when they signed Yakumakis. And so they still had Yakumakis and Almada. They've done so much great work around that. I really like the Schlee signing because, again, this is a 24-year-old Poland international, $3.5 million transfer fee. So this is a serious player. He's a ball winner. He's somebody who's going to balance the midfield so much better. Like, Tristan Mjumba came in and made the team look so much better because he was just a professional midfielder. They had just slop in the midfield before that, really. Like, they were so easy to play against. And again, Mjumba, I think his best characteristics are ball progression and possession based. But just because he was like good, fine at defending and intelligently could position himself, they were that much harder to play against. Like, now they have like a real life, like potentially top quality number 6, which I find to be just about the most important position for like any serious contender, because you go down the list, all of the teams who win the title have a really good number 6, and he makes the game so much easier for players around him.
Yeah, it's hard not to love what Atlanta United have done, not just this offseason, but we can take it back to last summer as well.
Yeah.
I was skeptical of Lobodjinice and John De Silva, and both players were lights out to end the season last year. Like, they turned Atlanta into a contender. Missing Thiago Almada for one of the games in that opening round series against Columbus really hurt them, and that second yellow was not a good moment for him in his Atlanta United career. Like, that really, really hurt. And they weren't going to win MLS Cup with Brad Guzan starting in goal, because he's just not that guy at this point. It's bared out in the tape. It's bared out in the numbers. It's bared out in all sorts of things. He's still an Atlanta United player. Did not retire over the offseason. He's in preseason training camp right now. Josh Cohen, though, brought in very much to compete for that starting job. I'll admit, like, I don't think even Atlanta United are like sure how good Josh Cohen is. He's gone from the United Soccer League in the United States over to Israel. Like we don't have a great read. Yes, he was in the Champions League for Maccabi Haifa. No, they did not make a run. Like we don't have a great handle on who Josh Cohen is as a soccer player and what his level is right now. With that being said, I'm of the opinion that it's hard to be worse as an MLS goalkeeper. Nothing personal at all intended to Brad Guzan, but it's hard to do worse than Brad Guzan did for Atlanta United last year. Like, that's a huge addition. I think if Thiago Almada wasn't constantly the hottest topic when it comes to MLS transfer rumors, like, if Almada wasn't the number 10 and they had, you know, Lucho Acosta, somebody who we know is going to be in MLS for a while longer, if he was their number 10, some elite level player, Atlanta United would be in every trophy conversation this year. The only reason, genuinely the only reason that they're not at this point with the roster looking the way it does, is that, you know, we don't know if Almada's going to be here. Everybody sort of assumes, and Tom, you know this better than anybody, that he's not going to be here past the summer, right? It's feeling more and more like, you know, barring a Godfather offer coming in across Garth Lagerwey's desk, that he will be here past the January window. Obviously, things are fluid, et cetera, the things that Tom has to say every time he says anything, right? But, like, if Almada wasn't their guy and it was a Lucho Acosta or, you know, whoever else in Major League Soccer, this team would be in every MLS Cup conversation. The only reason that they're not is because nobody knows if Almada's going to be here or not.
Tom, do you have much of a sense of what the plan is for if and when he is sold, or more likely when he is sold?
Yeah, so, and to what Joe was saying, even if you could just guarantee he'd be here 100% through until next January, like, they would be in all these conversations. Like, it's really, like, I completely agree with you. The tough part, so, in the timeline, it's the same as it was in the summer, same as it was at the beginning of the offseason. They have a valuation. They're not rushing him out the door. They, quite frankly, they've saved an open senior DP spot for when he ages out of the young DP slot that he currently has. Like, they aren't trying to let him go. Like, they understand that he is going to go. They understand that's what he wants. But they're not pushing him out, and they're not going to be under pressure to take a lowball offer. So this is all contingent on if that bid comes for, you know, $30 million or, you know, $25 million in add-ons and so on, whatever the combination of an offer that gets to the valuation. Only when that happens is when everything starts to go in motion. And on the replacement side, I don't know this to be fact, but I feel very strongly about this deduction. In addition to saving that senior DP spot for Almada, that's also for Almada's replacement. Like, you look at what Garth Lagerwey has done throughout his career. It's senior DPs, like, particularly at a spot like this. Like, I think that you could get away, or not get away with, you can have a higher success rate or a higher floor with kind of young DP wingers. Like, but you're 10, you're like, look, he signed Yakumakis. He didn't go for a young DP center forward. He signed, you know, Golden Boot caliber center forward in his prime. So, like, Nico Ladero was 26 or whatever when he signed him in Seattle. Like, I would bet a whole lot that it's a senior DP, and that's who the shortlist is of their targets. And I'm certain that they are ready to go the day that a offer comes in for Thiago Almada.
In both of your opinions, how much of a possibility is it that the Almada situation becomes a distraction for Atlanta this season, or just becomes a negative story? Is he likely to agitate for a move? Is it likely to impact his play? Do you see it bleeding into the performances of the team itself? Or do you think it's sort of a, he's going to move, we know he's going to move, we're making plans for him to move, it's going to be fine?
Yeah, that's where I sit on it. But again, that can change if he starts to get impatient and angry. If there's, like, again, if Ajax never made a bid, they never made official contact, but it was kind of back channeled through intermediaries, hey, what, like, would we be able to get him for $15 million? And the intermediary just laughed at them and said, I'm not even bringing that to Atlanta, you idiot. And like, Almada knows $15 million, that's, you know, that's not something that he could realistically get upset.
Were you the intermediary? Is that what I'm hearing?
Wish,
here,
man.
Did you laugh?
That would be much more lucrative than the stupid crap I'm doing right now. It's much better than tweeting, I'll say that. But what if a $25 million bid comes in, and maybe that's like just below the valuation? And what if Atlanta rejects it, and then the other team bidding says, that's our best and final offer, take it or leave it, and they you know, say no? Then Almada might go into Boca Negra or Garth's office and say, like, I'm not training. Screw you guys, accept this bid, I'm done. Right? Like, so I think that's at least on the table, and that's not to say anything. Like, that's just speculation. I haven't heard anything about Thiago Almada other than positive stuff about his professionalism, about all of this. And I don't even think it would necessarily be the most unprofessional thing ever if it came to that. And he was like, you know what? I got to force this through if they're going to, you know, reject a reasonable offer. So that's the only kind of worry about this situation for me, is if they disagree on what is and isn't a reasonable bid and what should or shouldn't be accepted.
Hey, Taylor.
But as of right now, with no bids, there's no argument to be had.
Hey, Taylor, what Tom said. That's okay. My answer to that question.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
Yep,
no problem.
Well, okay,
that was much more succinct than me. I like that.
So both of you, though, it seems like are, if we're going thumbs up, thumbs medium, thumbs down on Atlanta so far,
thumbs
you're
up.
Both, yeah, trending thumbs
two
up.
Thumbs up, yeah.
I'm just going to throw out the team. Oh, Tom gets exploding fireworks for his thumbs up and a lot of celebrations. Congratulations, Tom. Big moves in the Zencaster recording.
Stopped myself from
cursing.
So you're welcome, so you don't have more work on the back end to do.
Thank you for that. Where are your thumbs when it comes to Charlotte? Joe, let's start with you.
Thumbs, like, level, I guess.
Okay.
Like, they just haven't
I'm
done
so confused.
They haven't done anything so far right now. Like, it seems like Kamil Joswiak is going to be gone, and Tom can speak to that better than I can, obviously. There's been talk about Karol Swiderski going, and Tom, you've reported about that, and it seems like there is a desire to make that happen. Certainly on Karol Swiderski's end of things, they've made bids for, you know, for Albert Grønbæk. I don't remember what the first name is. From Norway, I believe he's over in Norway right now. Like, they're trying to do things. It's just too early to judge them because they haven't happened yet. Like, the two most notable things that they've done is sign a couple of players from the next pro roster, who I like both of, but, like, you know, we're not going to spend any time talking about that on this show, right? So I don't really know where to put my thumb other than just sideways, with me saying maybe it's going to creep up as they make some of these moves, because if you get rid of Joswiak, your life's going to get easier and it's going to get better. But, like, they just haven't done it yet, man.
Put it this way, then. Tom wrote a piece for The Athletic about offseason needs, what each team needs. It was written a little while back, but I think it is still quite relevant. Joe on Backheel, Ben Wright wrote one for you all, what each MLS team needs ahead of the 2024 season. Both of those pieces seem to indicate that Charlotte have a lot of good pieces, but it's sort of unclear which pieces fit together or how you fit them together or what Dean Smith is going to do with them. And that's where I'm sort of confused by them, is it feels like Both the Backheel piece and Tom's piece seem positive about aspects of the strength of Charlotte's roster, but are also unclear how that roster gets put together.
Yeah, before Tom goes, because I want to hear Tom's insight on this. I disagree with both Tom and Ben. So this is not a Joe Backheel speech for Joe. I do not like the Charlotte roster whatsoever. I think they are too old in midfield. I think they're too old along the back line. Kalina is a solid goalkeeper.
Melanda's like 16 years old. No, he's actually like 20, 23. Yeah. No, 23 now. But like, give me, come on.
He's 37.
I mean, Ashley Westwood in midfield, and you look at, I mean, is Melanda a good center back? That's a whole separate conversation. Right. Like, I just don't really like this roster. Is it good enough to quote unquote compete in Major League Soccer? Yeah, because everybody competes in Major League Soccer. But I just don't
see. Unless you're the Chicago Fire.
Maybe that's what it is. Like, I just don't, man, shots fired at Chicago. We gave Colorado an RSL time, and you're getting run over by the dumpster.
We're coming
truck.
To Chicago next. Don't worry about it.
Like, I don't know. I don't see it. I think they can get a lot better with like two or three moves between now and the start of the regular season. But as things stand right now, like I wouldn't have this team anywhere near the playoffs.
Tom, yeah, I say you.
And I do want to point out too that I've been talking to my editors about doing the like needs. Again, I know this isn't like an original idea that I had or whatever, right? But I had been talking to them about it for a few weeks. I was like, all right, I think I'm going to try to time it for when preseason opens for a lot of teams. I was 3/4 of the way through writing my story, and then I see on Twitter Ben's excellent piece on Backheel. I was like, this is literally the exact same thing I'm currently writing. And I don't want Ben to think that I'm just taking all of his notes here.
Oh, but you're going to?
Yeah, he's pretty smart, so I like the piece. So what I completely agree. It's disjointed, and that's been the MO of this team. That's been their problem for the first 3 years. It was under Miguel Angel Ramirez. He had a big say in a lot of signings, and like that was part of the frustration. He gets fired after 15 games. They have to start overturning the roster again. Latanzio comes in, and he goes 4-4-2-ish. It's like 4-4-1-1, whatever. You know, Swiderski playing as a 9.5. It worked really well. Okay, let's hire him as our full-time coach, and let's go, you know, instead of having Daniel Ruiz as the center forward, $6 million to go get Enzo Capetti as a center forward to play with Swiderski. And then all of a sudden, Latanzio comes in a preseason, and it's a 4-3-3 out of possession, but then a 3-2-2-3 in possession where Brant Brondigo is playing an inverted left back that he has to go from central midfield to left back. And they just get murdered in transition because, obviously, listen to what I'm just trying to explain. Of course that didn't work. Like, come on, right? So that's just been the MO of this team where they have good pieces. Capetti didn't have a good first season. Swiderski didn't have his best season, but he was still good. I still think that center forward partnership would work, right? Like, there's a couple of the midfielders that I like. They signed a Serbian international. He made a cap playing against the United States in a January camp. So he's Serbian youth international Foley and that one senior cap. Signed him for $3 million. He's been in their second team because they didn't do the salary cap correctly or they didn't anticipate how things would happen and they needed to get that deal done. They don't have any room for him in the first team because they need to get rid of Kamil Uziak or if it's Swiderski that leaves. So that's a microcosm of what I like that Petkovic signing, but it didn't fit within the salary cap because like there wasn't enough of, I guess, time for the vision to come through because they had to keep changing the vision with head coaches. So with under Dean Smith, if they play a 4-2-3-1, it's going to be my expectation. If they do sign Groenbeek or if they don't get him, because that would be a difficult deal to get done, I'm imagining that they're going to continue looking for like a young DP number 10 or attacker, right? And then you play a 4-2-3-1. Swiderski, maybe he goes back to Europe. Uziak, they need to get off the books. And that immediately brings Petkovic into the midfield. And then there you go. Now there's a 21-year-old Serbian youth international in your central midfield group. And that makes the cap situation so much healthier that they can go address wingers. And then they'll be able to add two more U22 initiative players to that group and then flesh out the depth. So to your point, right now, I don't think things are great. And there are a lot of ifs through that whole rambling monologue there. And who knows if all of these things are going to come true or not, particularly like the later it gets. Like these are all problems that we could have been talking about 2 months ago. And we're still sitting here with a bunch of questions. But if they do a lot of those things, like I'm higher on Charlotte this season than I think most are. But again, that's a lot of ifs and a lot of faith.
Are you higher on Charlotte or Chicago?
Charlotte.
Charlotte.
Okay. Yeah.
I know you want to
Chicago
ask me,
also
but
has a bunch,
Charlotte
bunch of stuff
as well.
To do.
Yeah.
Let's talk about them, shall we?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll jump in immediately in that.
Tom is already rubbing his eyes in seeming frustration or pain. I'm not sure which, but that feels like a good introduction to Chicago.
They've been trying to get rid of Kasper Schmeichel since, like, I don't know, 2 weeks after they traded for him and gave him a new contract. Jairo Torres has been straight up, probably for value, the worst DP ever. Like $6 million for allegedly an attacker who has 0 goals and 0 assists and 45 appearances. Like, what else? They triggered Gaston on him and as his option for no reason that made him a DP. And because of that problem, they had to give him a 2-year extension to make him not a DP, but giving him another guaranteed year. So now they're trying to get rid of him again, even though they could have done this for free 2 years ago. Suke has been here for a year, one of the most expensive right backs in the league. Straight up isn't good, money or no. So that's like 5-6 players that they need to get rid of. And oh, by the way, they gave the front office new contracts. Way to go for all of these great decisions and great signings. They had a meeting with Kellen Acosta day one of free agency. And day one of free agency, if the players agreeing to visit you on day one, you're in the lead. You like, hey, close the deal, right? They said all of these things about you. We want you to be the face of our rebuild. You know, these are all the things we're going to do. The team's going to be much better. Like, you know, these players need to leave, and then we're going to sign X, Y, and Z. And Kellen Acosta is still a free agent. And the last I heard, he talked to Chicago a few weeks ago, and the feedback was that, you know, Chicago's like, hey, like, you know, where are you at in your decision and all that? And he's like, hey, do you remember when you told me about how I was just going to be part of the face of the rebuild, but like, these are all the other things you're doing? You haven't sold anybody or signed anybody since we spoke a month ago. So like, were you just saying this? Like, were you just trying to get me to sign? Like, what's going on, right? Like, so they haven't really done much of anything. Again, like Charlotte, there's still plenty of time for that to change. I do think that when they do bring in a DP number 9, the budget is there for, like, league record transfer fee. Like, the money won't be an issue for all the jokes and criticisms I'm making. Their ambition to spend money and to try, you can't be questioned. It's just about spending the money right. And through the history of soccer, other than Manchester United for the last 8 years, if you keep throwing money at the problem, eventually it's going to work. And, like, again, like, whether they, as long as they don't sign Jairo Torres 2.0 next, they obviously still need to get rid of him to bring in another DP. But if they get rid of Jairo Torres, as I expect, they'll have 2 DP spots open. And if they hit both, that covers up a lot of problems. And if they can convince Callan to come, that covers up some problems too.
Do you have, maybe faith is the wrong word, but do you have any belief that, given that it's the organization that brought Jairo Torres in the first place, that they will get it right this time?
Not a lot of faith, but again, it's just the history of soccer is at some point one of these signings has to work, right? Just law of averages.
It's got to work out. Joe, I know that you are incredibly bullish on Chicago. I think you had them second overall in Major League Soccer next season. So do you want to do some defending of the Fire?
No, like genuinely no. I think Tom's laid it out really, really well. And I don't think it behooves us to spend any more time talking about them until they actually pull one of the triggers that, you know, they're probably hovering over right now.
Joe refuses to yes and improv style. Got that down. Cool, cool, cool. Joe, who would you like to talk about? Who's a team that maybe is sort of living in your head? You're wondering what they're doing. You like what they're doing. You have questions. Who is that team that you keep focusing in on for whatever reason?
Well, there's a bunch of those teams. One team that's sort of close
for
to top,
one.
Top of mind for me right now. Man, I try to yes and give lots of options to go down, and now I get shot down. It hurts, man. It hurts. I'm going down the FC Dallas route, a team that I haven't admittedly spent a lot of time thinking about this offseason so far, but we're hitting a lot of like the underdog teams, right? We're hitting a lot of the teams that I don't think anybody expects to be great this
just
year.
Just to be clear, the question was, who have you thought a lot about? And I believe you just said, it's a team that I haven't thought a lot about.
Until
okay, thank you.
Last night when I was trapped watching Inter Miami take on FC Dallas at the Cotton Bowl in Texas, and I see Nico Estevez pulling out a different shape. And I thought this was interesting for a few different reasons, right? One, I'm a tactics nerd. That's self-explanatory at the moment. But number two, one of the big talking points for Dallas this offseason, probably the biggest, has been how they need another center back, right? They look okay at the top end of midfield. I think they've got a little bit of depth there that they like, and some pieces that I like there as well. Out wide, they look probably fine. Paul Arriola was quietly terrible last year, but Bernard Camunga was really good, and that covered up some of the sins there. But the big talking point has been, are they going to get another starting center back, right, to pair with Nkosi Tafare? And then Nico Estevez comes out and rolls out a back three last night against Inter Miami. And from what I've heard, like, this is something that they're really considering going to more and more as the season progresses. Like, Nico Estevez seems, Like, Nico seems taken with the idea of playing this back three. And I don't hate it for what it does for their most important player right now in the squad, Jesus Ferreira. Ferreira didn't start as a number nine last night. He started off to the right side as sort of the half space guy in that 3-4-3. It's a really good role for Ferreira, who's functional enough and versatile enough to do a bunch of different stuff. But now when you go down that route, like, you also need a number nine. If you're going to play Ferreira and rotate between Ferreira, Camungo, and Areola as your two starting players on that side, like, that's the key for this Dallas team, is to go through those players, but you need a number nine to go with that. And they've been linked to Petar Musa, Benfica rotation piece, young Croatian number nine.
Who was the really good journalist who did that report?
That was Tom Boger, I believe, who did that report.
Oh, he's a hack there.
Future Mulliter, Tom Boger.
Absolute hack.
I don't know if that deal's going to get over the line, and I would imagine there's a lot of other competition from a lot of other places to get him because his pedigree looks real good for an MLS player. But now I'm fascinated because Dallas are clearly looking for something on both ends. They're looking for a number nine and looking for a center back. And now they're rolling out a new tactical approach too. Suddenly Dallas got real interesting compared to where they were, you know, maybe a few weeks ago, or where they were at the beginning of the offseason.
Tom is nodding. Would either of you rather see them splash the money to get that DP number nine, or would you rather them splash the money to get that starting high quality center back?
DP nine. I've been dying for Jesus Ferreira to be a second forward again. Like, he played a little bit like that over the half a season when Ricardo Pepi broke out. I think that's the best for him. Like, again, I think Jesus Ferreira is a good center forward in a 4-3-3. Like, he scored whatever it was, 15 or 18 goals two seasons ago in that role. I still think the absolute best way to use Jesus Ferreira is off another center forward. And if they do sign Petar Musa, again, the information I've got is he's not convinced about leaving Europe, or he's still kind of on the fence. Dallas would be the best financial package, as far as I understand, but I guess I don't know for sure. But he's I guess not convinced about leaving Benfica for MLS and whether he wants to stay in Europe or not. So again, we'll see. We're getting towards the end of the transfer window in Europe, and particularly after February 1st, it'll be like, well, either I stay at my current club or I go to MLS or Saudi or Turkey.
Tom, question for you. I think this idea of the financial side between MLS and some of these like non-top tier European leagues, right? I'm thinking about Portugal, I'm thinking about Belgium, the Championship, the Eredivisie, like that tier of leagues. This topic came up when Miles Robinson chose to stay in MLS and just straight up said, like, yeah, I'm going to make more money with Cincinnati than I was probably in my next European move. Like, how are the tides changing? Not that the finances are changing maybe a ton, but as MLS continues to establish its profile around the world, are more of these players who are on maybe some of the fringes of good teams in those second tier European leagues, like Musa, like I'm trying to think of maybe some of the players that get relegated, right? Gregerson is an example of that, Bouanga, Kubas, those kinds of players. Are they starting to consider MLS more seriously now than maybe they would have 5 or 10 years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. Because this is kind of how it helped open up South America, is that, you know, some of the better rising talents, they've like getting paid more. Kokoro, I haven't heard the player that Montreal is signing from Hercules, the Uruguayan center forward. He said it on the record as well. It's like the buzzwords that you say when, hey, this team is offering me a lot more money. It was like, you know, the financial package is, you know, really good for my family. The family, you know, what players say in public when they mean I want more money and they're offering it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so that's not like that's the norm when it comes to MLS teams shopping in South America. It's kind of been the norm in Europe. Like, that's why there's been a lot of players, straight up average players over like 5 years ago, who were coming for like way too much money. And then it would be pretty quickly found out, oh, that guy stinks, just because he's English or just because he's Serbian or just because he's Italian doesn't necessarily make him better than everybody else here. So I think that there was the trial and errors. But now European players are starting to see more that, oh, like, I can leave Europe, come to MLS, and then I can still go back to Europe. But some Cucho Hernandez is a really great example of this. I think he's going to be back in Europe someday over the next, you know, couple years, right? The more and more that these perceptions change is the more and more that these deals are happening. Like, Evander is somebody who always a player of his profile goes from Michelin to a top five league in Europe, right? Or whatever it is. Instead, he came to Portland, and that doesn't mean that he doesn't ever want to go back to Europe, and or that he's closing that off. So, yeah, the money there, it's like player by player. If you're a DP, like you will be getting more money here than like if he were to go to Bologna or something, I believe is the other offer for Musa. You know, if you're a right back, maybe not, just because of the constraints of the cap. And that was like going to the Miles Robinson case. Miles Robinson, like it was the same thing with Aaron Long the year before. They're more valuable here right now, right? Like Cincinnati, like the going rate for their profile in MLS is, you know what, Miles Robinson is going to be on what, like 1.7, 1.6? Like I don't know the exact numbers. Wasn't getting that at PSV and probably maybe getting like 35% of that at PSV if that's what it came down to, right? Like, so it just kind of is what it is, profile by profile, where the differences are going to be. And like, I can't blame these players for deciding to stay here. Like, I wouldn't take a 70% pay cut either.
No, that's really interesting. Joe, thank you for that question. Joe asks good questions. Joe has the best questions. I've always said that. We're going to take one more break. We're going to come back and talk about a few more teams. Back soon. Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. Welcome back. Gentlemen, we've made it through two segments without talking about either LA team, Miami, or either of Seattle or Portland. I feel like we have to rectify at least some of that now, legally speaking. Otherwise, it might not be an MLS podcast. Joe, let's start with Miami. Is the goal for most of this season just to like protect their aging veterans at all costs? I still think this is going to be a playoff team. We talked about this. I don't think they win the Supporters Shield, but I think they are comfortably a playoff team, and then they comfortably win MLS Cup. What are the keys to success for them this season, and are there any areas that they still need to strengthen?
Yeah, well, I'll start with the second part of that question. I think there is another area now that they need to strengthen. They've just brought in another center back, Frere, who was coming from Pumas. He was over in Greece as well. Like they have made that move official, I think, maybe literally while we've been recording. That was reported by Tom and other folks as well. Like this is a legit player that they're getting. So I think they have every reason to be excited about that. The other thing that I think they maybe need to do, and Tom, I'm curious on your perspective of whether or not they're going to be able to do it. Facundo Farias went down with an ACL injury in Miami's first preseason game. Of all the players not named Messi in this squad, the one that I was genuinely looking forward to watching the most this year was Facundo Farias, who didn't have the final third production last year. 21-year-old Argentine winger, came in midseason, one of those U22 players. He didn't have that quite all the way there, but the dribbling ability, the vision, the skill on the ball, you can tell that this guy's a player. And he's dealt with knee injuries before. This is his second major knee injury. He's going to miss the season. I would assume Miami are going to put him on that season-ending injured list, which should open up another U22 slot for them to go out and use. The key for Miami, before I flip it to Tom to see if they're going to do that or not, the key for Miami is to continue to improve their attacking play, get Julian Gressel and Luis Suarez and Messi all on the same page, and to help them stop being so over-reliant on Messi. Because Messi comes in last year, and he carried them to the League's Cup trophy. They weren't sustainable through that run. Like, they just didn't have other pieces, and now they do, right? They're betting on Luis Suarez being the guy that he was in Brazil last year, and I think that's still a pretty good bet, despite, you know, not a lot of joy for the entire attack through the first two preseason games. It's preseason. Let's all calm down. Like, this is all fine. But, like, that's the goal, is continue to do those things and then hope that the center backs that you've added, Freire and another year of playing time under Tomas Avila's belt, like, that those players are good enough to continue to solidify your defense, along with getting Gregory back in midfield. You know, will he fit in that dual number eight role that he's never really played for Miami before outside of two games last season alongside Busquets? We don't know for sure. Like, there are questions here, but I think everybody still feels real good about this squad. Tom, are they going to go out and find a Farias replacement, or maybe the better question is, when are they going to do that?
Yeah, that's a good question. They have a couple options. Like, they can sign a young DP as well, as long as they have the allocation money. Nobody knows exactly. I get questions from other GMs like, hey, how does Miami have all this allocation money to buy down all of these players they need to buy down?
Hey, narc on them real fast, if you don't mind.
I get a lot of people saying, hey, you know, you should write about this. I already did. Like, I don't. There's no public info on allocation money, so it just kind of is what it is right now. But yeah, so if they have enough allocation money to buy down one more player, they could sign a young DP, and that person hits the cap obviously much lower than the, you know, senior DP. It's 200,000 versus 600,000, so maybe that would help offset the allocation money, whatever. This is too far in the weeds. So they could sign a young DP. If they do intend to replace Farias, they could replace the U22, as far as my understanding is. These are, sometimes they get super complicated. Nothing is straightforward in the rule book, which is frustrating. There's always a yeah, but, or yeah, if. I believe that they would be able to replace the U22 slot if they move him to the season-ending injured list. But the future issue that would cause,
yep,
is then that new player or one of their three current U22s
has to go.
Next year needs to be sold. So I don't know what the planning is there. I think, again, this is all speculation, not inside info. It seems like it'd be more straightforward for them to add a young DP if they have the money in the budget to be able, the allocation money to buy that player down, because then they wouldn't be creating that problem of four U22 initiatives next offseason. Because, again, I was super excited to watch Facundo Farias this year as well. Like, $5 million signing before his first knee injury, he was like, all right, this guy's going to go be sold to Europe for $15 million. Like, that's the kind of talent he was. He didn't have the final third production, like you said, Joe. But, like, just passed the eye test pretty quickly. It's like, oh, this dude's good, right? And then, like you said, like, some of the like middle third numbers or some of the other stuff, like, it's like, all right, this is a 21-year-old kid who's adapting to a new country, new league, yeah, everything else, Messi mania. Like, I would love to see him with a full preseason and then getting into this team where, again, they're going to play 60 games, like, or 70 if you include their 15 preseason games. And so he was going to be a really important piece to this team. And he like Gressel, that's the contingency for when Messi sits, is, okay, can Farias, like, break down teams with the ball, transition, whatever it is? Will he take that step to be somebody who can carry us through some rotation games? Plus, Julian Gressel's crossing ability is a singular talent that can create chances when things bog down, or hopefully can create chances. Just other options and avenues. Both of these players were, I thought, really, really good in that they could complement and play with Messi. And then when Messi needs to rest, they can also do some semblance of, all right, like, our attack won't completely crater without Messi. And so it's just really disappointing that he got hurt. It sucks.
Joe, you answered the loan question last week on a list of questions show. That is a move Miami could make, no? They could go for a season-long loan, and that sort of alleviates some of the concern about a U22 after this season?
Yeah, I mean, that would help get them out of the pickle that they would create for 2025. To be honest, though, I'm not that concerned, and I wouldn't be that concerned if I was Miami about getting another U22 and having four technically in your squad with one on that season-ending list. Like, Tomas Avilés is legit good, right? There's going to be interest. Now, the disadvantage, is that, you know, the European club comes in and knows that Miami have to sell, and so you lose a little bit. I mean, Miami's ownership group doesn't seem to care about year to year or day to day like operating losses. So I think it's all probably fine. I'm more curious about when that addition is going to arrive and who that's going to be and how that impacts Miami still trying to feel each other out. Because make no mistake, like this group, the big four and the non-big four players and, you know, how those all mesh on the field, like there are still questions about how good, not if this team will be good, but how good they will be. I'm curious to see how this injury and the subsequent fallout kind of impacts that trajectory.
Shall we talk Los Angeles's?
Yes.
In exactly that way. Tom, with the Galaxy, Chicharito out of contract, Douglas Costa mercifully out of contract as well. Tyler Boyd moved to Nashville, Raheem Edwards to Montreal. Ricky Pouge remains.
Taylor, quickly, just to interject, Taylor, I love how you never editorialize, man. It's always just like right to the facts. You know, there's no jabs, there's no barbs being tossed
of course
around.
Not.
I really respect that about you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that praise, Joe. Ricky Pouge, is that pretty much it? Is that what we're going for? It's going to be the Ricky Pouge show? No, I'm sure there
Ricky
will be
Pouge
more to
the
Galaxy.
The
who is going to be joining him? Who is going to round out that Galaxy squad that will make them the Galaxy that we've come to expect in seasons past as opposed to the Galaxy that did not live up to Joe's expectations last season, or I believe Tom's. I think both of you were pretty high on them.
Yeah, where did you have them last year, Tom? Because Goss makes fun of me literally every single show for picking them second in the West. You had them one. You had them one in the West.
I thought it was third. Oh, Tom.
Honestly, sorry for outing you. I feel bad about that.
You know who else I had in my top three? FC Dallas. Just
oh, so did Goss. So you're the worst of both of us, Tom. How does that feel? God.
They're the worst quality.
You guys are the experts.
Yeah,
right?
I was. I was watching. I was still going down with like, I don't know, man. Like it's just, Ricky Pooch is so good. I know that's probably the heart of it for you. It's just like like any team that has him, I'm like, yo, they're gonna be fine. Even after their transfer ban in the summer, they had like 10 games left. I was like, well, you know, Maya Sheed is pretty good, man. And you know, like, Billy Sharp can score some goals. They might still make the playoffs. I swear to God, I was saying that through September. And I was like, you need to jump up, get off this shit, man.
Yep. Tom, what level team, like if Ricky Pouge were somehow on the Chicago Fire, are you then like, they might be able to do it. It could be fine. Like what is the level where Ricky Pouge is no longer enough to justify your hype?
No, because we've seen it with the Galaxy that like he actually does need a couple players around him. Like that would just be the same thing. But yeah, so and again, I'm going to be pretty optimistic, and that's the foundational point. So like whether you agree or disagree with what everything I'm about to say, understand that it comes from my belief in Ricky Pouge to make players around him better. Gabriel Peck coming in for a club record transfer, Brazilian winger. The idea this winter was we need more runners around Pooch and more players who score goals. So I interpreted that as they were going to bring in a DP9, and it doesn't look like that's the plan at the moment, and that they're going to go with Jovlic. And if Jovlic is league average, he's going to score 14 to 15 goals if this attack looks like what we think it's going to look like. Gabriel Peck, I've heard some differing things on his ability or his price tag, whatever it is. Like they're still spending $10.5 million on a player who's with Brazil's Olympic qualifying team right now. Like, yeah, those players cost a premium. So, like, maybe it is a little bit too much money, but if he's a really good player, that's going to be all that matters. Their other DP spot, they're still in talks with Gank and more so with Joseph Pantsil about personal terms of they're ready to trigger an $8.5 million release clause from Gank. This guy had 17 goals and 14 assists as a winger last season. I think he's got like 6-4 this year. If you look at his kind of advanced stats, and particularly that career year, the 17-14 season, in Belgium, he was in the 99th percentile in goals, expected goals, shot-creating actions, progressive passes received, all of these things that it's like, if you created in a lab a player that you want to have near Ricky Pouge, it's a dude who's super dynamic, a good finisher, and makes good decisions in the final third that actually contributes to goals. He's going to be playing on the back shoulder of like he's more going to be more of like a Bouanga role of like an inside forward, not a winger. And these are the players that you need around Ricky Pouge. And with Diego Fagundes already being in the team, that gives them another option that, OK, no matter what, even if Fagundes is starting, because he's another I want to get on the ball and create as well. And I think that can fit well with Pouge. But the other winger at all times has to be somebody like Packer Panso, like somebody who is playing off somebody's shoulder, playing as an inside forward, not as another winger who wants to get on the ball, because then that takes away the space for all the other players. So this makes a lot more sense, I think, particularly if they get this Pantsil sounding over the line. I think that would be
a phenomenal signing. And that would be, again, I would just start overhyping the Galaxy again.
how overhyped would you be?
Should I say, I should just keep saying first place for them until it happens and be like, I told you 7 years ago, I know that there's a different coach, different sporting director and 11 different players, but I told you, man, I was ahead of everybody.
So maybe signs, reasons for optimism for the Galaxy. I say that because with LAFC, I'm much less optimistic, which is odd to say about a team that has had the consistent success they have had. But Joe, we've got, Kellen Acosta out of contract, Carlos Vela out of contract, Palacios has departed. Dede Boanga is either demanding a move or positioning himself for a new deal, but either way, there is some instability there. Tom is rubbing his hands together to suggest that perhaps money is a motivator. How are you feeling about Steve Cherundolo's men?
I still feel good about LAFC. I think they're pretty well above the soup that we met like referenced earlier on in the show in the West.
I hate soup.
Sorry, to double down, Tom, to recap, you said you hate soup. Is that what you said? Yeah, all right. Interesting. It's a little overrated, probably. Or maybe it was important
for me to completely derail your point.
No, it was. The people want to know these things. They want the insight into your personality beyond the mustache and obviously now the mullet that you'll rock until the end of time. People want to know this stuff. I think this LAFC squad
hate soup? Let's stick with it for a little while. Consistency? Is it if there's bread with it, does that change the opinion? Or is it pretty much just on soup?
I'd rather have a sandwich at that point, right? Like, I don't love the texture, the consistency. It's not a big fan.
Tom doesn't like consistency in his soup or in his LA Galaxy team. I think this LAFC squad, neither do I, by the way, at least on the Galaxy stuff. I think this LAFC team, when you have Dennis Bouanga and you have like three returning starting level players in central midfield and like two starters along your back line, it's not ideal for LAFC. This team's still going to be fighting for the top of the Western Conference. The West is wide open. LAFC are going to make some moves. Whether or not they'll fill all three DP spots is a question. They didn't do that last year. And clearly they still made a deep run. One extra player maybe would have put them over the top. So maybe they'll do something on that front. Maybe they won't. This team's still really, really good. They need another piece in midfield. They need to figure out what the attack is going to look like. I don't feel great about their center back pairing with Aaron Long starting. I'm not super high on him as a player. They need to figure out the left back spot, but I think they're moving closer on that stuff. Like, there are things to do. And Tom, I'm a bit curious. I know LAFC are usually pretty quiet, and it feels like, you know, there's not a ton that comes out of them, except when Tom's coming in with the backbreaker on Gareth Bale. But like, usually things are pretty quiet around LAFC and a couple other clubs in MLS. Like, is your perception that they're waiting to figure out what happens with Vela and Bouanga before making big moves? Or why are we not hearing about them bringing in a nine, adding another piece to midfield, and kind of getting done the things that everybody knows they need to get done?
Yeah, that's probably a bad sign for Vela's future. And I reported yesterday that they are still talking. So like that, it's a possibility that he returns. But my assumption, maybe not exact understanding, is that it seems like dealing with the other stuff first and then kind of figure out Vela, which doesn't make him sound like a priority and makes it sound like, you know, hey, maybe he'll come back if everything works out. So it's more so the other way around, which is a little surprising to me. I will say they're returning seven starters from last year's team if Bouanga does indeed stay, and their stance is we expect him to be back. Like, we obviously love him, don't want to lose him, all that stuff. And, you know, there's 8 more days left in the transfer window, so this conversation will change after a week, depending on what happens. But if Bouanga stays as they expect, they got 8 starters. They still have Filip Krastev, who has like a $7 million purchase option, the on-loan Bulgarian international central midfielder, so maybe he steps into a bigger role. One of the starters they needed to replace is goalkeeper, already have Hugo Lloris. One of the starters they need to replace is Chiellini. And again, between Long, Segura, and Murillo, two of those are going to be the starters. I think they'll be fine there too. So really, like, they do still have a lot of work to do. Don't want to dismiss that at all. But it's not as much kind of as it probably feels with Vela out of contract and Acosta out of contract and Crepeau already gone and Palacios already gone. Like, there's a lot of pillars in this squad still there. They definitely need to re-up depth. They need Buke to give them something, anything next year for a $5 million U22 initiative signing. And they need to bring in another left back, again, starting quality left back, midfield depth, all of this, starting number 9. But even if they just make kind of like league average or even league below average,
if they return what they currently have under contract, including Bulaga, like they're still going to be really good until the summer. So, and they've definitely earned the benefit of the doubt of their maneuvering and their maneuvering on the fly and kind of evolving each of the last kind of 3 years and still being successful, that I'm going to have to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Thomas, two people that love the LA Galaxy more than life itself, I'm going to ask you maybe the hardest question I could ask. Who's going to finish higher, in your opinion, next year, LAFC or the LA Galaxy? I'll do me first. I think LAFC will still finish higher, even though I like what the Galaxy are doing right now on the field and off the field as well.
Yeah, it's obviously incomplete for both teams at this stage. I do think if the Galaxy sign Pantsil, I would slightly lean that way. Okay. And part of it would be LAFC have more competitions and there's more to kind of figure out right now and juggle with the squad. Like the depth is going to be an issue if they don't solve it over the next few weeks. I do think that LAFC is the better bet. They have much better pedigree over the last few years. Again, their best player, Bouanga, just won two Golden Boots last year and scored 38 goals. The Galaxy's best player is Ricky Pooch, is liking tweets about can't wait to see you back in Spain, stuff like that. So LAFC is the absolute better bet and more likely than not. But I do think that the Pantsil signing would change a lot of things for the Galaxy.
A few more that we'll try to get to quickly because we are going long. Tom asked how long we'd go. I said around an hour. Tom, I hope you're ready to buckle up for like 4 hours. You've both.
It's not your fault that I won't shut the hell up. Like this is completely on me.
So we got to get the soup chat in. If we don't get that, also, people even tuning in.
Also, Taylor, Tom is still breaking news while we're going, which is honestly credit to you, Tom. I've been multi-screening AFCON games, and you're out here talking to sources. So apparently, according to Tom, listeners may have already seen this. Miguel Almirón, who may be going from Newcastle to Saudi Arabia, Atlanta United still have a big, big sell-on fee, which could come back and pay them big, big money. What is it, Tom? 25%? Is that what you reported?
Yeah, I've been waiting to I kind of heard this last night, and then I tried to ask a clarification on if this. Sorry. People aren't reading the tweet. Atlanta United absolutely have a sell-on clause in Miguel Almirón, and Miguel Almirón's linked with a move to Saudi Arabia. I've been told that the clause is between like around 20 or 25%, which is
a
huge.
Big chunk, yeah.
What I haven't gotten clarification on yet is whether the clause is sell-on period or if it's sell-on percentage of the profit. So you only get a percentage after 29 million. And I don't know the numbers of what the Saudi club is talking to Newcastle about. So they could get nothing if that's the case, but I haven't heard definitively whether it was sell on of profit or just sell on period.
Boom.
And so I was waiting for that. And then I saw that it started to come out that somebody else was confirming that there was a sell on clause. And I was like, screw it. I'm just going to tweet it right now.
But we still don't know if it's a sell on or sell on after profit, though, right?
Correct. Which is why I worded it that way.
Well done, Todd. Way to report wisely.
Way to report. Way to do your job, Tom. Yeah. Good job. Proud of you.
You both have talked about the West not being particularly strong this season. Is it fair to say the Seattle Sounders would be your favorites in the West?
I've got them like kind of still with LAFC. I know that's probably not going to be a very popular take among Seattle Sounders fans. I am maybe not quite all the way there on Pedro de la Vega in the way that everybody else seems to be. I think he's a good player. I think he's going to add some real value to what the Sounders want to do. Listeners, Taylor loves Pedro de la Vega, in case you didn't listen a couple weeks ago.
Entirely
because he's
FIFA,
good in FIFA.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes.
Good in FIFA, good in real life. We all know that's how
Football Manager does a lot of my opinions.
Totally.
Yeah. Don't hide it.
Like, he's a good player. Just hasn't proven to be like a game-changing player for Lanús in Argentina. Still young, 22, I think it'll be 23 pretty early on in the season. So there's a lot of development that can still happen there, but we know that it takes time sometimes to adjust from one league to the next. And that does limit, in my mind, how good De La Vega is, affects pretty aggressively where I would set the Sounders ceiling, basically. They're a real good team. Like, they're bringing back basically every other key piece besides Nico Ladero. They're going to be good. Like, the question is just how good. So I've got them probably still right up at the top of the West, but it wouldn't shock me if LAFC or even, you know, one or two other wildcard teams that we don't expect come and climb over them. But yeah, they're going to be fighting for a home playoff series next year for sure.
Thomas?
My favorite is probably Minnesota United, because what's not to love about not having a head coach, not having a sporting director, and your best player just showing up whenever he wants? Like, congrats. He got celebrated for coming a week and a half late to preseason, and just what a hero is all I have to say.
I think it was Charlie that tweeted, like, it's a good move from Reynoso on the power dynamics to miss, like, 4 months of the season last year so that you get celebrated when you only come in a week late this year. I might start using that in our everyday operations here at TSS. We'll see. But, Taylor, I am thinking about that. just to let you know ahead of time.
What was it? Was it a Seinfeld bit where it's like, yeah, like if you're 5 minutes late, people are mad at you for being late. But if you're like an hour late, it's like, oh, thank you for even showing up at all. So I think that's what Reynoso's doing.
I'm surprised, right, Tom, because I don't think Minnesota United are in a particularly strong position. I'm shocked that you would have them as your dominant team in the West.
No, I'm with Seattle, too. And I agree on I guess, the flaws or maybe the lack of sky-high ceiling with this club. But the West is weak. There's questions at all these other teams. Like you said, I do think it's Seattle and LAFC, and both of them have a lot of questions. For me, I'm not as contingent on whether or not Pedro de la Vega makes an immediate positive impact or like a sizable positive impact, because like you said, they're returning everybody with Ladero. Ladero wasn't starting in the playoffs, so they're bringing back every single playoff starter. Who knows kind of if they'll bring in another center forward. I'm assuming that they're going to with Hebert having left, so maybe there's another option up top. De La Vega, again, it's just another option. I think that he'll be stronger than Leo Chu, just because I've never really been too convinced by Chu. But, you know, who knows? But, again, just having more options and more variants to change this group with the floor that was set and with the Brian Schmetzer team, with all the quality in this team, I think that they're the best bet because their floor is so high. Like, I can't imagine this team being under 50 points, honestly. And, like, that's even with me saying, yeah, they're pretty good. They're fine. It's just what they continue to do and all, you know, both Roldans, having Yaimar and Atencio and Jao Paulo, and you kind of go on down the list of all these players, Jordan Morris, like, maybe, again, they don't have a Buonga level player, but they've got like what, seven dudes who are top five at that position, six, yep. six, five, like something like that. Like, they're going to be really good.
Tom, if we're reverting back to our thumbs up, thumbs middle, thumbs down evaluation of the offseason thus far, is it thumbs up for St. Louis?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say so. Because I do like the Chris Durkin trade. I know that he kind of splits opinions a little bit, but I think that they really needed another body in central midfield to continue to allow Edvard Löwen to push forward without needing to rely completely on Blom. Just and like, again, I like Jared Stroud, but if you can turn Stroud and Bartlett into Chris Durkin, like, I think that's a good trade, particularly because I think both Bartlett and Stroud got new contracts from DC. So, like, while Chris Durkin's going to use the U22 initiative slot, like, those two players are about to get more expensive than they were last year. So I like that move for them. The Giacchini transfer, I think it just makes sense for everybody. Getting up to $4 million from Como, like, that's really good. Got him in the expansion draft. I think it's good for Giacchini, like, capitalizing on your career best year, moving on, you know, trying to challenge for promotion in Italy. I think that's all good. They'll need to replace him with another attacker. We'll see kind of where St. Louis go from there. But they brought in two likely new starters at fullback spots. And, again, the Durkin deal that increases competition, depth, and options for Bradley Carnell. And again, this is another team that, because it's like the opposite of what we were saying for Charlotte, their vision from top down has been there since day one. And that's why they hit the ground running so fast last year, because they knew exactly what they wanted their play style to be. And thus they knew exactly what kind of players they wanted and what every profile needed to be in every position. And again, whether you sign the best target you think you can find or a medium target you think you could find, it just lowers the variance of, I know exactly what we're looking for. So even if this player isn't exactly the best version, at least he's going to fit. And as long as you hit on enough of those guys, it just makes it easier and informs these decisions. So I think St. Louis are going to be fine. There's a regression coming. Absolutely. There was a regression that came over the second half of the season last year. But I'm not going to pin them for overperforming and having a historic expansion season. I just don't expect them to finish first. Don't expect many teams to finish first. I don't think it's fair. But I think this team should comfortably be a playoff team.
And in terms of expectations, do either of you have any expectations when it comes to Toronto? Positive, negative, rebuild? What are we looking at, Joe?
I mean, we're in rebuild mode. Anybody who's in Toronto right now seems to be in rebuild mode. So there's so many needs still in this squad. And all of those needs are even buried by what on earth is going to happen with Lorenzo Insigne and Federico Bernardeschi. I was thinking yesterday for no reason. This is completely unprompted. I'm just broken inside. I was thinking about that half of soccer that Toronto had against Charlotte FC. I think it was the first time that Insigne... Tom, do you remember this? Insigne,
yeah.
Bernardeschi...
The 4-0 game, yeah.
Yeah, Michael Bradley was on the field. Like, they were cooking. They were incredible to watch. Like, I was fully in on Toronto. And things crumbled so quickly through a cloud of vape emanating from the training ground. Like, it's gone so poorly for them. What's going to happen with Insigne? What's going to happen with Bernardeschi? I don't know. They need a number nine. They need a left back. They need a center. Like, they need everything. Sean Johnson was terrible last year. Like, there's so many problems right now. They're my wooden spoon contender. The hopeful thing, and I wrote this for The Guardian recently, like the hope for Toronto is that they've always been willing to spend, right? So similar to what we talked about earlier with Chicago, if you throw enough money at the problem, eventually you're going to be good. And Toronto have been good with some of the same leadership involved. So there are other more systemic problems throughout the organization in that Bill Manning is doing way too much. But like, there is hope ahead. I just don't think, based on where things stand now, that that hope probably relates much to 2024.
Yeah, it's crazy to talk about a team that had pre-Messi signing the highest wage bill in the league, spending $15 million on Insigne and $7 million on Brunelleschi, whatever it is, that this is a rebuilding year, right? Like, but it is, man. Like, they're in this predicament because pretty much since Tim Bezbachenko left, everything has been short-term fix, short-term fix, short-term fix. Like, just look at the roster. Like, Sean Johnson, again, I still thought that he was a good signing. They overpaid a little bit, but that's what happens in free agency. Then they went out, they gave Matt Hedges multiple guaranteed years when nobody else would, because they were like, we really need a center back right now, and we're in win-now mode. I don't care if this is a bad contract. We need to sign him. Oh, crap, we need a left back. Let's get Raul Petretta. Okay, we need to overspend on him. And guess what? He's bad. Like, and then you kind of go down the list of all these players that, oh, crap, we need to duct tape this and duct tape that. And all right, like, to get the player that we need to overpay. And then all of those decisions came crumbling down in 2023, not least of which in Insigne and Bernardeschi. I really do believe that there is a pathway if they can get rid of Bernardeschi on a permanent deal, because I don't think a loan really does too much, like, it whether or not it opens the DP spot. Like, again, these are arcane rules about maybe it would because he didn't come on a transfer fee. I don't know. It's just depends on how much the salary is covered. So if they're able to get rid of him permanently, I think that'd be the perfect resolution for all parties. Then there's a world in which, all right, Insigne is really good, and then you sign more, I guess, hardworking players to cover up the deficiencies that Insigne will have off the ball. Look, Carlos Vela won MVP. Lucho Acosta doesn't do a ton off the ball, right? Like, going down the list, like, you can carry somebody who's a passenger in defense if they're that good in the attack. Maybe they the three new starters they need on the back line, maybe they hit all three of those. Like, I don't think that there should be any expectations of 24, and they better be thinking long-term, which I do believe this front office, Jason Hernandez is the new GM. I am certain that that's what they are doing, which is what they need to do. But there is at least like a little sliver of, hey, if, you know, if these nine things work out, like, it's just so weird to talk about a team that has Insigne, the second highest paid player in the league, in his prime Italian international, as like, this team stinks and this is a rebuilding year. Like, it's just weird to like juxtapose those two thoughts.
Tom, Joe had them as his potential wooden spoon contenders. Do you have them similarly ranked, or is there anybody else below them?
Yeah, that's it for me. Chicago and DC are probably down there.
DC.
Minnesota, obviously. Duh. And Austin, I think, are going to be fine, but they are another team that's in the bucket of they need to sign like four new starters. So at current time of this discussion, I think you'd put, like, I don't think Austin are going to be particularly great this year, but as long as they do sign, like, they've been clearing out space since Rodolfo Borrell came, I've got to imagine that they've got at least three new starters coming in. Again, just speculation, not any inside info, but as of right now, I think that they would be in that air quote top tier for Wooden Spoon.
I'd add CF Montreal in as well, even though I like the coaching hire, the roster's just not very good, so they're in that bucket for me as well.
There we are.
Yeah,
Joe,
I'm on the fence about that. Oh. I think, like, I was, as I was scanning, I think that they, I think that they're, like, I was on the fence about whether to put them there, but, like, the two signings they're making, I already forgot how to pronounce, Kokoro and then that Bulgarian, Yankov, like, both of those moves aren't announced. I know that Kokoro is happening. Yankov reportedly is traveling to Canada today. So I think that that changes the math a lot. And a week ago, I would have absolutely said, yeah, I really like the coaching hire, but they just don't have enough talent. And again, maybe these two players don't work out, or maybe it takes them a little while, but that was just enough hope to kind of have them push into the next year.
There we are. Well, gentlemen, thank you both. Sorry to any fan bases that we did not get to. It's kind of tough to get to every single fan base in like an hour-ish podcast episode, but we do our best to run through them. Joe Lowry, thank you for all of your knowledge and insight today.
Yeah, thanks, Taylor. This was fun.
And your lack of mullet as well. Tom Bogert, thank you very much, my friend, for breaking news in the middle of the show, but not on the show. We really appreciate that.
I love seeing you guys' face and hearing your voices. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Listeners, thanks so much for listening. Please continue to do so, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.